This is John Luhr of the Phoenix Suns. Listen to your Suns rise this season on the BS of the Sun podcast.
I'm waking up at the start of the end of the world, but it's feeling just like every other morning before. Now I wonder what my life is gonna mean if it's gone. The cars are moving like a half a mile an hour, and I started staring at the passengers and waving goodbye. Can you tell me what was ever really special about me all this time? But I believe the world is burning to the ground. Oh well, I guess we're gonna find out. Let's see how far we've gone. Let's see how far we've
gone. Welcome back to the BS of the Sun podcast, Jim Kokenauer. The Suns have finally started playing some real basketball, preseason basketball, so real basketball if you want to count that. They did have a scrimmage before that last weekend, and here to join me now and discuss all the pinch hitting for Dave King, and actually Kellen Olson, who's with me tonight, and a couple other people are going to be taking turns on the podcast. I need fresh victims. How are you doing tonight, Kellen?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Outstanding, outstanding. And before we get into that preseason game against the Kings, the Suns victory, I wanted to touch on the scrimmage first, because that was kind of the first look that we got at the Suns team. And it was an intra-squad game, so just like the preseason, and even more so, or less so in that case, there's not a ton you can take away out of it. But the Suns scrimmage, I thought it was a really cool thing that the team did. And I hope that it's something that they do on a yearly basis. I think that would be a good tradition for them to start. And I was at that game. Dave was at the game also. We were there as media. And the Suns actually opened that up to the families of the media. They asked us to invite our families. Dave was there with his wife and daughter. I brought my daughter with me. And even though it wasn't necessarily the most entertaining game, it was really sloppy, and some of the off-court stuff was a lot more memorable than the on-court performance. I really thought it was a good thing for the fans. The team, they did autograph sessions afterwards. The players stayed around for a long time. Eric Bledsoe actually signed my daughter's Eric Bledsoe Star Wars shirt. He got a good chuckle out of that when he signed that.
Nice.
And I think it was a good thing for the fans to kind of connect, to get close to the players, that type of thing. It was very familial. And what are you, Kellen? You're younger than me, so you don't have any really background with this madhouse on McDowell. What do you think about the Suns, their attempt to try to connect to the grassroots? They had a bunch of the older players there. Walter Davis was there, and Walter Davis was actually my first favorite player on the Suns that I can remember when I was very young. What do you think about their attempt to, like, reconnect that way?
I think that part of it was great, but there couldn't have been a better time for them to just kind of click the reset button, so to say, and just play basketball in front of their fans and try to have a really good time and make it like a community event, because this is now the second summer in a row where it's been pretty ugly for them. Last summer was Bledsoe, and this summer was Markieff. So I think it was just nice for them to have just a community event together, play basketball. It didn't really matter about the result in the game or how anyone looked. It was just more about bringing the fans together to come out and see a free scrimmage. And then for the older fans like yourself to reminisce about the madhouse on McDowell, I know I was there when I was very, very young. My dad tells me about it a lot, but I honestly don't remember much about it. But like you said, memories of Walter Davis and all the other older players there. But my main takeaway from it was that it was just nice for everyone to get their mind off of the weird, just awkwardness that has been created from Markieff's thing this summer, and then also Bledsoe last summer.
I'll touch on the Markieff stuff here in a second, because he was able to make himself salient during the game, even though he didn't play. He missed the game with a hip injury. I'm not sure how a person injures their hip during a shoot-around, a non-contact type of shoot-around. But nonetheless, I found it interesting because I had spoken with someone in the Suns organization recently, and the discussion was about why, and this was kind of brought up by the Steve Nash signing with the Golden State Warriors going there, was why there weren't many Suns from the last 15 years that had remained with the team in some capacity. That the Suns still had a bunch of players from 20 years ago. They had guys like Mark West, Jeff Hornacek, some of these other guys that had been around the team before that, but not many from this last era of basketball. And I was told that, well, part of that was that the team was trying to find a new identity with these new young players, and so they didn't want some of these other guys maybe around the organization as much to kind of bring up those fresh memories of what the team used to be, and they were trying to find a new identity. Doesn't that kind of seem weird? Now, this is like a paradoxical type of statement, because the Suns want to form a new identity, yet they're having a scrimmage and bringing up the older generations again with Jerry Colangelo, Walter Davis, Eddie Johnson, all these kinds of guys there. Doesn't that strike you kind of weird, Kellen? What do you think about that whole dynamic with not many of the former Suns from the last 10, 15 years being associated with the team?
You know that they want to set that event up around the 7 seconds or less players that they can, because that's one of the most popular basketball teams in NBA history, really, in terms of how much fun they were and how good they were. And that's just in the NBA as a whole. So if you look at it in Phoenix, of course, there are all those amazing players that they brought back for this ceremony and for the pregame festivities and such. But I think that they would have preferred to have like a Nash, even like guys that weren't there that long, like Quentin Richardson, Jimmy Jackson, like where's like Kurt Thomas, you know, like anyone like that would have even been fine, just to see faces like that that resonated with. I'm sure there were a lot of younger fans there who didn't know who Walter Davis was or weren't familiar with whoever else was there. And I think it's just strange, like you said, you don't really want to put a finger on it, and I don't think you can really put a finger on it as to why, but it certainly is strange because, it, like I said, it was probably their most popular team of all time, maybe outside of Barkley and KJ, because they made a trip to the finals.
I know that the team is also, it makes sense for them to try to promote this next generation of players, and some of these guys might actually take hold, and a lot of it has to deal with winning. And if the Suns can start winning and they can be back in the playoffs, then they'll capture back the attention of the city more so. And I think, for instance, a player like Eric Bledsoe is a guy that can sell some jerseys if he plays well and develops into the, you know, borderline all-star player he is. And you know, if the Suns are a good team, then a player like Bledsoe having a good season maybe gets into that type of conversation. But at that scrimmage, for instance, there were a lot more Nash and Amari jerseys than there were any active players or even all the active players combined together. So I think that the team, the fan base, is still kind of holding on to that. And it's understandable, I think, since the team hasn't made the playoffs in the last 5 years, that they haven't really moved on. So maybe they will. Moving on to something else at the game. I don't know if you saw this, but Dave was actually tweeting about it at the game, and I was up close trying to get some close-up pictures to find out exactly what Markieff Morris had on his hat. We figured out that it was like an FOE hat with Illuminati familia on the back, and it was funny because before the game, Markieff was wearing the hat on backwards. Markieff was wearing blue jeans and a Suns t-shirt and his hat on backwards. Very casual. There was no dress code enforced for it. You know, Markieff, I guess you could say maybe he didn't really need to wear the hat, not the FOE hat, not backwards. And Hornacek came up to him for the game, and we could read his lips saying, turn the hat around. And Markieff turned the hat around forward. So he had that. His body language, some of that stuff, he looked really relaxed. He did get up and kind of cheer on with the team, everything like that. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, we talked about at the press conference that they held on media day. I think Keith did close to the bare minimum, actually, in my opinion, but he was professional, if you want to count like that. You know, he didn't apologize. He wouldn't answer questions about the summer. He wouldn't go into depth on anything. He wouldn't take any individual interviews, answer any questions individually. He did his piece and that was it. He was done. But what do you think about the professionalism there? Like, looking in the mind of Markieff Morris, because this, I think, kind of still encapsulates what's wrong with his line of thinking. A player coming to a basketball game like that and wearing his hat on backwards on the sideline.
I don't want to go too far to speculate, because that's really what you have to do here in order to formulate a real solid opinion on it, because of the changes that he's gone through in the past couple of months. But it's difficult to say. I think that he handled Media Day pretty well, all things considered, whether that's because he got a PR person to tell him what to do, or he decided that going out his way with the things that he was doing on Twitter were just not right and obviously weren't going to help anyone, not including himself. And it's difficult to say, because you wonder how much the trade factors into it. Roland, we're going to talk about this later, but Roland talked about in his article, his preview yesterday, about how much the antics didn't help Markieff and how difficult it is to get a trade involved with him because of all the history with him. And you can tell that that's become something that he's been thinking about now. And it's, I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on this, because everyone wants to know that Jim has a history of being pessimistic and things like that, but you seem to at least give him credit for being professional on Media Day. What do you think, and more specifically seeing him courtside?
It's funny at one point, because everybody was sitting forward in their seat on the sideline, both teams, all the sets of coaches, all the players, and they didn't get the picture. We were sitting there, and he was taking his phone out to get the picture, and Markieff was the only person leaned back, relaxed in his chair away. So you had like 20-something people all sitting forward in their chair, and Markieff leaned back. So you look at the body language. Now, I do think, I mean, Media Day could have been a grease fire. He could have turned that into an imbroglio that could have just been an embarrassing thing for all parties, and he didn't do that. He chose not to do that. Do I think that he could have said something along the lines of, hey, I didn't handle things well this summer, and, you know, I'm going to do better. I'm going to, you know, say something to the fans even to try to endear himself there, you know, bring them into it. He didn't do that. He chose not to. But he didn't make a mess of the situation. You know, what I don't know about Markieff is whether, if he's not fully engaged, how does that help or hurt his performance? Can a Markieff Morris, who is still upset at the Suns organization and still wants out of here, can he still play at 100% Markieff level on the court and also not have any deleterious effect in the locker room, any kind of pernicious effect there? So that remains to be seen, and also it remains to be seen whether Markieff can actually stay on good behavior. If he's just trying to stay on good behavior and biding his time till he can get out of here, how long can he do that? Because we know he's had behavioral problems in the past. So when he wasn't on this leash, he had problems. Now that he's on it, is he actually going to be able to hold himself back? Now, again, I'll give Markieff credit. All the players stayed for a long time. There were huge lines. People were waiting in for autographs after the game. The guys all stayed there. You know, they didn't have a chance to get back to the showers, but they stayed around and signed all the autographs, and Markieff stayed around with everybody else and did that too. So he didn't ditch out anything like that. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a thing that's going to kind of hang over the season to a certain extent. You know, maybe it'll go away if things really go smoothly through the beginning of the season, but it's something that, you know, in the back of your mind might arise, rear its ugly head. Now, on to the preseason game against the Kings. You were there at that game, so I'm going to kind of let you give me your analysis of what you saw. And part of that, you had told me, was that you thought Markieff in that game actually had a fairly strong showing.
I thought that his energy levels were much higher than he showed in the past. There were a lot of people on Twitter who thought his shot selection was poor and that he was just looking to kind of create for himself. I'm not really sure about that. He was open when he had looks from mid to long range from for a two-pointer, and that those are the shots you want him to take. Obviously, long views are awful in any circumstance, but those are the jumpers that he's built around, and it's just his game happens to be built around a fairly inefficient shot. So you want him to take those whenever you have him open. He had a play where he dove on the ground for a loose ball. He had a play where he went straight up and used verticality, like legitimately jumped very high to use verticality and protected the rim. I don't think I've ever seen him like actually use verticality to protect the rim before. He's known for taking charges a little bit, but I just thought his activity level was pretty high, and he was talking on defense. That was probably the strangest part of the game for me. I was 15 rows up in the stands, and I could still hear him talking, and I could hear TJ Warren talking too. And that was something we talked about with Tyson Chandler, is that he's a very vocal guy, and hopefully it would pass off on him and these guys would start talking, because we never got a solid answer from Hornacek or anyone else as to why they wouldn't talk on defense. It was just like, we're trying and they're just not doing it. That was basically the answer we kept getting. But now they were, and Keith especially was one of the most vocal players on the floor. And I don't really care if he has an off shooting night. If he's talking on defense, diving for loose balls and playing like legitimate defense all around off the ball and on the ball, then I'm sold. He can stay.
Yeah, we'll have to monitor that progress. That might be something interesting with the team, like you said, with being a little bit more vocal, helping each other out that way. It might actually be, you know, worth monitoring that the Suns may actually have a chance at being a better defensive team than offensive team this season in bizarro world, because they have some plus defenders on this team now, and the shooting, the outside shooting, even though they've tried to bolster that still looks a little suspect to me. Now, obviously, the two heroes of the night, I guess you could say, were John Luer, specifically number one, and then also T.J. Warren. They had very good games. What did you see that you liked about those two players? Obviously, Luer had the dunk over DeMarcus Cousins, but that was only two of the 17 points to go along with the 13 boards.
Oh, they were two big points, so I lost my mind. I didn't know where I was for a second. I lost consciousness, I think. It was a game where Hornacek, I think, was trying to figure out the lineup combinations he could use for the game. So there were guys like P.J. Tucker, Sonny Weems, and Tyson Chandler. I think the three of them only played 30 minutes combined, I want to say, and that's because he either knows about the flexibility that Tucker can bring into the lineup, or he knows that, like, Weems is just strictly a two-guard and Chandler is strictly a center and he's not going to move around anywhere or anything like that. And we saw guys like John Luer, Booker, and T.J. Warren get more run because Warren is the kind of guy you want to try out with more spacing and see who works better on the floor with him. So how does he look when you start Teletovic and Luer together? How does he look with Booker and Bledsoe? How does he look with Bledsoe and Goodwin? So I think Warren played 28 minutes in that game, and he was out there with a bunch of different lineup combinations. And we all know that Tony Buckets is going to get his buckets when he's on the floor. So when he plays that long, I think he's just going to score, but I think it was more about lineup combinations. As it goes with as for Luer, I just saw a guy who had played or practiced against Memphis for a long time and wanted to be physical. He was not scared to go inside and be physical for rebounds. He had 13 on the night, and three of them were offensive. He was just in the right places at the right time. It kind of reminds me of the way Brandon Wright played when he was here. He didn't look like the rest of the Suns because he came from a playoff team and with a really good coach, and he was always in the right places on the floor. And Luer had that same kind of thing. And there's not a very big sample size for Luer as a shooter, but he shot 6 of 8 from 3. And if he can shoot 6 of 8 from 3, be a good rebounder, and just be a good team defender, which is something you pick up from playing on a team like Memphis for that long, I think he can play. I think he can play the 4. I think he can honestly, he can play the 5 if you've got the right matchups on the floor. The Kings, they only had Willie Cauley-Stein and DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Moreland were their three bigs. I don't think Kostas Koufos played, so they only had one real center in there because Boogie Cousins is more playing power forward now. I don't know. What do you see with John Luer? Because I just saw him as kind of a, we don't really like who's on the board with the second-round pick. Let's go see what we can get. And John Luer, he can shoot. He's a stretch four. Okay, sure. That's kind of what I saw it as. What did you see it?
You know, every once in a while you can get lucky with a reclamation project. What's interesting to me, and now with some of these guys off the bench, I still think that there's some positional battles. These guys are still playing for playing time heading into the season for rotation spots with some of these guys. And I think with T.J. Warren, I think he's already get his minutes going into the season. I think we know that he's going to get his time to go out there and try to grow into his role. But I think a lot of people heading into this preseason had kind of penciled in Mirza Teletovic as the backup four. And I don't think that John Luer got that memo because, and it's only based off of one game. And, you know, if you look back at last year, the preseason, the first game the Suns played against an NBA team, they played like some overseas team first. But the first game they played against an NBA team, it was that what T.J. Warren also in that game was in double digits, and he obviously didn't play much more for the rest of the season. So it's not always that it can be like a prognosticated, it doesn't foreshadow something to come. But, you know, John Luehr in that game, I think, showed me that he's not ready to concede that role to Teletovic. I think that he's trying to stake his claim to those backup minutes. Do you think going into it, are you under the same frame of mind that Teletovic kind of, it was his job to lose, maybe more so going into it, and that John Luehr is trying to stake his claim?
Yeah. Once again, referencing Roland's preview piece, he went over how much this team's going to need 3-point shooters, and that's what Teletovic is. You watched film of the guy in Brooklyn, and he could catch and shoot, dribble, or shoot off the dribble. He could pretty much do anything when it came to getting his jumper off. And I thought that was just that sold. That's good enough for me. There's your backup four. He can stretch the four. He's going to be able to hit big threes when you need him to. He's not scared of the moment. Yada, 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 all that. But I thought that was the case. And then I saw Luehr play last night, and he just looks like more of a complete player to me in terms of what he brings at his best. I'm not saying the John Luehr we saw last night is John Luehr for the entire season. But Luehr looked like a guy who could be physical, get rebounds, play defense, protect the rim a little bit. Like, he's not going to obviously be Rudy Gobert or anything, but he actually was there under the hoop battling. And that offers more than what Mirza can. And I'm just interested to see how that goes. Teletovic is obviously signed with the team for a much more important contract, but I could see a situation where that doesn't really matter. It's not like Mirza's locked in for a tremendous amount of money or anything, but Luehr was basically a flyer, and Teletovic is the guy they committed money to. But I could see a situation where it's just who's got the hot hand. Of course, it's been one game. I'm really eager to see tomorrow night and see if Luehr even gets the same amount of minutes, or not the same amount, just he gets minutes like Teletovic did. Because, yeah, that could turn into a race. I didn't really see it that way last night, but now that you said it out loud, it does look like it could be a race for minutes at the backup four.
I think it could, but I think also in that last preseason game last season, Anthony Tolliver was also one of five Phoenix Suns in double figures that game, along with T.J. Warren. So things didn't turn out too well for Anthony Tolliver as the season meandered along. But the other thing I thought, and this is more of this guy is going to be there because everyone else took a step back. I don't really see at this point, I don't have a lot of faith in the Suns' backup two guard. I know we have Bledsoe and Knight, and those guys are going to take up a bunch of the minutes. Devin Booker played a lot in that game. I think he's too young to depend on anything. Weans didn't play a lot. I'm not really sure that the Suns actually have a real backup guard that they can depend on. Ronnie Price, at the point, we all know Ronnie Price is not much of an NBA player. He stuck around for a long time by being just barely passable. He's not a great backup. So that might be a position where the Suns might be in a little bit of trouble. If Bledsoe or Knight can't stay healthy all season when they're down to one of those guys, I'm not sure if they have that backcourt depth. But let's move on to the stuff you kind of hinted about this a little bit. You spoke of this a couple times. Rollins article. I thought that was really good that he posted today, and the first part of it, let's just go through it, the moves of the offseason, and now that we've even had a little bit of real basketball, we can kind of see what we think about those moves that the Suns made. And Marcus Morris, Gerald Green, Brandon Wright out, and then we had Chandler Teletovic, Sonny Weems, John Luehr, Devin Booker, and Ronnie Price in. I think most people are probably fine with that Devin Booker pick, at least. What do you think about the out versus the in?
The out versus the end with what?
The out versus the in. What the Suns left, the Suns' losses compared to the additions. What do you think that did McDonough upgrade the talent on the roster?
Oh, I think he definitely did. I think in terms of just being a basketball team, I think he made them much better. Marcus and Gerald are two very hit-or-miss players. Marcus is a guy that you can suddenly play as your small forward. You can start him, and he'll get you 19 points and 11 rebounds, and he'll hit, like, four threes. And you'll have other nights where he doesn't have a shot going. He decides he's Carmelo Anthony, and he does nothing defensively. And Gerald, we all know Gerald. I don't need to explain the Gerald Green experience. You replace them with guys that are hopefully going to be more consistent. But like you said, Sonny Weems and Devin Booker aren't necessarily two guys that scream consistency and scream these guys are going to be solid. But you got to look at Tyson Chandler, and that makes the Suns better. They're going to have a rim protector for all 48 minutes on the floor, like Roland said in the article. And they added a legit backup four. Earl Barron got minutes for this team last year. I think that's another thing Roland said. I'm basically reading off Roland's article here. And then Lure, like we said, Lure and Toledovic, they could both play roles this season, not just Toledovic, maybe Lure. The Devin Booker pick, I think, was just they think they need shooting, which they should think that. They do need shooting, and he's someone who can bring that eventually, but he is the youngest player in the league right now. What do you think about that as a whole? Because the Chandler signing does make your team much better, but it could also poise issues for the future. Is it desperate? Is the Chandler signing desperate? What do you think about the whole offseason?
I think there's a good chance that they did upgrade the talent. What's interesting to me is I almost think under the key additions, you could put TJ Warren there because he basically didn't play last year. And I'm starting to get on board with the this kid can play type of that group. I'm starting to be a believer in TJ Warren's future as at least a scorer, a guy that's going to be able to, you know, put up double figures off the bench this coming season and make a positive impact. So I think that's kind of big for the team. And then, like I had alluded to a minute ago with the backcourt not being as deep as possible, you know, TJ Warren's emergence there might even help to where PJ Tucker can also shift over to that too, because Tucker can kind of play multiple positions, and he's played some too. He's guarded guys like James Harden, things like that in the past. So maybe that even gives you a little bit of flexibility there, so that might help if the backup guards are struggling, and I'm hoping that's not going to be the case. John Lohr, you know, maybe you get lucky there. You got to hope at least one of Mirza and John, one of those two guys can hit the three and be out there, be dependable, hopefully play a little bit of defense, grab some rebounds. If both of those guys can't make an impact, then you're in trouble. So hopefully one of those guys can. If John Lohr turns into another, you know, this year's Miles Plumlee, then great. Then obviously you've made a big gain there. I didn't like the Ronnie Price signing. I thought that there were better players out there. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I would have rather had Ish Smith if we were going to do a retread point guard for a backup. But, you know, overall, I like the moves. I think that T.J. Warren replacing Marcus Morris, I think, might turn into a good thing. Brandon Wright's gone, but now you have Chandler and Lynn, so that's a good duo. I think that the talent has been upgraded. So now we're going to strengths. I'm not sure it's really easy to know what the Suns' strengths are at this point. What do you think might be the Suns' strengths this year?
I think it's going to be flexibility. I think that with Bledsoe and Knight in the backcourt, you've got two guys who do very different things, in my opinion, despite them both being point guards. I think now with a whole summer and offseason with Knight, you're going to find better ways to use him more properly. And I saw it in the preseason game. He's just more comfortable creating his own shot off the bounce effectively, I should say, because he just made poor decisions last year. He didn't really seem comfortable. He seems more comfortable this time. And then if you take that flexibility the other way down low, you've got Chandler and Len for all 48 minutes. Having a true center for all 48 minutes of the game is going to be a big deal, in my opinion, because of the rebounding, the shot blocking, the rim protection, and just the overall presence that they're going to bring. And then when you go to the wing, you've got guys like Markieff, Mirza. I wasn't going to include Lure, but after last night, I'm going to include him in the group. And then up a little higher up, you've got Weems, Booker, and Goodwin, who all do different things. Weems is more of a do-it-all guy. Now, I'm not sure how much of that do-it-all is actually going to translate to the NBA, which is, I think, the biggest question for him, because if he can get one or two things that he's good at overseas to come over here, maybe it's shooting and defense, then he can be huge. He can be a huge add for this team. Booker, just a pure shooter who does a lot of smart little things on the floor. And then Archie, we all know Archie. He he moves quick and he can really get to the rim. And that's three guys at the shooting guard position who do different things. And then at small forward, you've got PJ, who's the grinder, the rebounder, the defender, the really strong player like that that you need, who is the energy. And then TJ is just the scoring machine who makes all the smart plays, makes smart little rebounds and passes, always in the right place. And I think everyone brings something different to the table. There aren't really any players that are similar, and I think that's going to create good things for the team, especially offensively. What do you think the strength is this year?
I'm going to go with something saying that shoring up a weakness from last year, something that was a weakness last year that hopefully this team can turn around. And I think that was the late game struggles that last year's team had. And I think that this team has a chance to move past that. And I think a lot of that is with Tyson Chandler coming on board. I think this team has a chance to be a better defensive team. I think with him out there, with PJ, Eric Bledsoe, now that he's, I think, growing into his role a little bit better, and Brandon Knight out there. The interesting thing is I think that there's a lot of defensive potential in the starting unit, but I don't know whether enough of that translates to the backups. I'm not sure that there's really any kind of lockdown perimeter defender on the bench.
Exactly.
So you might have another strong backup center defensively with Len, but I just don't think the rest of that unit can maybe pull that together for the Suns to be a really good defensive team overall. But with the starting unit, I think they can be a good defensive team, especially for a couple of possessions like that. And with guys like Bledsoe and Markieff, even if he's doing that. And I think TJ Warren could grow into a guy that can score in the clutch. He just seems to be able to kind of create his own offense. And guys like that usually can, you know, score in the last few minutes of games, create their own offense like that. So I think that no more the buzzer beaters, that scourge is going to be gone this season. I think they'll do a lot better later in games. From strengths to weaknesses, but what do you think is going to plague the Suns this season?
I think the Suns are still 1 year away from making the playoffs, in my opinion. I think a lot of that has to do with when you look at the key additions again. Mirza Toledovic is a guy who hasn't spent his entire career in the NBA, I believe. Same with Sonny Williams. Obviously, John Luehr hasn't really played a big role on a team before, and the expectation of him actually being the backup four on this team, or even playing a key role, switching off on the four to the five, is a bit much. Devin Booker is the youngest player in the draft, and Ronnie Price, you can't expect much from Ronnie Price. He is the veteran that's going to help the clubhouse, I think, a lot, the locker room, I should say. Bledsoe and Knight really stood out to me when they talked about Price. By the way, just to go off on a quick tangent, they talked about how big it was to have a veteran like that, and Knight said, like, they're already friends. They talk to each other about their families and things like that. So I mean, a guy around like that is going to be good for them. And then, of course, there's Tyson Chandler as well. And I'm not just going to gloss over Chandler. He's got NBA championship experience. He was a very good player on a very good team that won an NBA title. But it still goes to Bledsoe, Knight, Markieff, PJ, Len, Warren, Goodwin. All these guys don't have enough NBA experience, in my opinion, to hit where they need to be right now, because we're going to talk about this in a little bit, looking at where teams are projected to finish this year with wins. But I think they're going to need to be really, really good this year to make the playoffs, and I just think they're not good enough to reach that gear. Don't get me wrong, I think they're going to be a pretty good team, but I think they need to be really good just to make the playoffs in the West. And I don't think they're going to be able to reach that. I think you get one full season under Bledsoe and Knight, and they're going to have that experience together and in the league, and find out truly what it takes to lead a team, be like the guy for a team. That's probably going to be Bledsoe this year, and Knight as well. They're going to switch off with that. But, yeah, that's my overall take on their weakness. I just think they're another year away. What do you see more on the floor, though, in terms of their weakness? Is it three-point shooting, like Roland said? What do you see?
Yeah, the three-point shooting has got to be a big one. The Suns, I think that they ended up 20th in the league, either 20th or 21st in three-point shooting of the team last season, and that was due to a really precipitous decline. They were actually the worst three-point shooting team in the entire NBA after the All-Star break. And they took that team that couldn't hit any three-point shots, and you didn't really add any real marksmen. You have Mirza Bledovic that maybe might help you there. You added a 19-year-old kid, Devin Booker, who's the youngest player in the NBA, and I don't think you can expect him to come out and really help a whole lot. And, you know, maybe Devin Booker actually could even hit some threes, but I don't think that a 19-year-old kid, I mean, he's not LeBron James, so even if he is hitting some threes, then he's probably giving away more back than he's going to get you. I don't see how a young kid like him is going to have an overall net positive effect if he's not on the court much. So I think that you took a really poor three-point shooting team and gave him a chance to be really poor again. I don't know. You know, maybe Marquise Morris suddenly learns how to shoot threes. He hasn't to this point. I don't know that he was really working tirelessly over the summer on that. You know, he might have been engaged in other pursuits. You know, maybe he was. I don't know. It didn't seem like from the, you know, social media following that he was really too focused on trying to become the perfect fit in the Sun system. But, you know, there's other things. It was funny because, I think Dave had an article and maybe quoted Mirza or something to the effect of paraphrasing that, yeah, we're going to have open shots every time. And I was like, yeah, you guys are going to have open shots and you're going to miss them. Because you guys can't shoot threes. So it doesn't matter how wide open you are if they're not going in. We watched you guys miss a lot of open threes last year, too. So, you know, that's a big one. I'm not sold on the bench. It's a very unproven bench, so I'm still scared that might be a weakness until they show otherwise. There's not the empirical data to support that they're going to be a good bench. They might be, but there's just no previous data to support that. You can't draw any conclusions based off of zero evidence. Other things. I mean, one of the Suns' biggest weaknesses is playing in the Western Conference if you're looking at it making the playoffs. And that's, I guess, a goal for this team. Is that a good goal? I mean, should that be the goal? Or are the Suns still – is that selling the Suns short? Do you think internally – should the Suns have a better goal than just making the playoffs? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that the Suns really struggled at last year were all these little categories that are just about, quite frankly, they're just about being a really good team and being a really well-oiled machine that's good at basketball. And there are little things like second chance points, points off turnovers, opposing fast break points. There are these little categories, and when you look through those on like NBA.com, you would see the Suns near the bottom on basically all of those. And that just comes with having the chemistry and just being a unit and playing well with each other and being able to cover for each other in situations like that. That's a lot of situations, second chance points, opposing fast break points. Those are situations when you need teammates to cover for you on defense or rebounding or whatever. And they just didn't gel last year. And that was very apparent when you watched them play at times. And I think the biggest goal for them has to just be a better team collectively and just have my favorite thing about me today being there was just Bledsoe. He was smiling. He seemed very happy. And I love seeing that because that's probably the leader of the team, in my opinion, and the best player on the team. So seeing him smiling like that and being happy and being like, yeah, this is my time to be a leader, which is the second year in a row he said this, of course. But I think that's a big sign. A guy like Chandler is going to help with that. One of the things I noticed in the preseason game was just like Chandler being like vocal on the bench as he always is, standing up, clapping, just clapping for anything. It got everyone engaged on the bench, and everyone on the bench was more involved with what was happening on the floor in front of them. And I think little things like that are going to come over time, making them a better team and cleaning up all those little areas that I talked about, the statistical places where they struggled. That'll be a couple wins up for them, and I think that should be the biggest goal for them besides making the playoffs. But I think that comes with making the playoffs as well. Is that what you see?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to touch on what you were saying with Eric Bledsoe. It really has been a paradigm shift. His body language from when he first arrived in Phoenix and before the summer with the contract and what it is now, I mean, he has just went, you know, from kind of introverted and quiet, and now he is much more amiable and gregarious. He's a much different guy. I thought, and I know a lot of other people shared my opinion or my concern that he just didn't necessarily look like he wanted to be here. We weren't sure whether he wanted to be a son. he, you know, when he had his exit interview before that summer, didn't really, you know, give the fans anything to, you know, feel warm and fuzzy about. And so he was kind of indirect, evasive. But now, I mean, I've seen him smile a lot lately, and so he does look like he's a lot more comfortable. So I'm really glad that that's kind of changed going into this. So, you know, with another thing, and then we'll get to the Suns over under, and one other thing to touch before that, something that a lot of people are going to be looking at as the season progresses and heading into next summer. I know that the discussion is going to heat up, especially depending on the way a couple things go. And that's the Suns' other starting guard, Brandon Knight, and looking back at the trade. And we're going to see whether maybe some of the fans on the Suns are going to have buyer's remorse on this deal when we get to next summer, because this summer is very likely going to be the summer that the Lakers send away that top three protected pick. It's top three protected. I don't think, you know, unless the Lakers win the lottery, I don't think the Lakers are probably one of the worst three teams in the league. I'd be surprised if they're not somewhere in like the 5 to 10 range. So it's probably going to be a fairly good pick. You know, the Suns sent away Tyler Ennis, Miles Plumlee, that pick, and they ended up with Brandon Knight. They also got Kendall Marshall, and it was funny. I was talking with you that with the Kendall Marshall, whether they even let him off the plane at the airport. Got that visual of the Grandpa Simpson where he walks into the saloon and sees Bart at the counter. He puts his hat down, does a circle, picks up the hat, and walks right back out. And I know a lot of people will get that visual. They'll remember that. That's what I am like in Kendall Marshall's trip to the airport in Phoenix, was the same type of deal where they didn't even let him out of the airport and he just got back on the plane. But, you know, if the Suns, if everything goes well and Brandon Knight plays very good, then I don't think people are going to care where that pick ends up. But if things don't go quite so well, if the Suns are out of the playoffs again and people are still kind of unsure, do you think that a lot of people are going to regret giving up that lottery pick?
Yeah, I think there are people that are always going to be skeptical of this trade. People were – one of the things that really made me irate about the national coverage of that trade was everyone talking about how valuable that pick was that they gave up. And before that trade, we didn't hear much about this pick and how valuable this Philly pick was, or the pick they sent to Philly, and how much value it had and how it was the best trade, one of the best trade chips in the NBA, and how they let it go. I don't really see it that way. I've been looking towards the 2016 draft. It's very far away, but it looks like not a very good draft and looks very top-heavy, which is important because there are three players, Ben Simmons from LSU, Scott Labissier from Kentucky, and Jaylen Brown from California. They look like far and away the three best players in the draft. And the thing with that draft pick is that it's top three protected. So my opinion on the trade was that they thought the Lakers were going to get better this offseason. They had a lot of money. There were a lot of names out there. They didn't get better. They got Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert should be getting more love than he did when they made that signing. But anytime you add Lou Williams to a backcourt that already has Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, and Kobe Bryant, you're probably not going to be that good at basketball that year. So I do think that they're going to land around that 5 to 10 range, and the pick is going to fall. But even if they land there, I think they're going to be – they're not going to look in dread, because I think the draft is not turning out that well. Of course, it is only October, and the draft is very far away. There can be people that come out of nowhere. D'Angelo Russell kind of came out of nowhere last year. So that's not a very good approach of the trade, but it's also – we should be focusing more on Brandon Knight, the player, and I think he's going to have a very big season. I think this is going to be his best season in the NBA, playing two guard instead of point guard. I think he's going to be more comfortable with the way Hornacek staggers him. We saw it in the Kings game. What Hornacek did like last season was he took Bledsoe out of the game first and then let Knight play point guard for the last 4 to 5 minutes of the first quarter. And then so Knight played the entire first quarter and then Bledsoe came back in. So I think that's going to help Knight out a lot. But how do you see the outlook of the trade? Is that something, if right now, if you got the chance to take back the trade, would you rather have the pick, seeing the way the West looks, especially for the Suns this year?
I've come to terms with the move, and based off of putting it in this perspective, even if the Lakers convey the fifth overall pick in the draft to the Philadelphia 76ers in 2016, it's not like they're getting a number one or number two pick. And even at that number five, so you're getting that in 2016, what is it, 2018? Maybe when that player can make a meaningful impact, maybe 2019. I don't think the Suns were looking to try to wait 4 years to cash in on that when the opportunity arose. And part of it, I think, was roster cleansing and kind of a – I mean, it was a kind of a bad situation. Let's not try to, you know, put it in nicer terms with Goran Dragic and everything the way it went down. But as part of that, McDonough had the chance. Obviously, he liked Brandon Knight. That was a player that he coveted, and this was a guy that he thought was going to be a very good player in this league. So he had a chance to turn that pick and everything else, and he got a couple other future first-round picks in the process, and to a guy that he thought could help this team win now. And I think that Ryan McDonough thinks that Brandon Knight is, you know, if you were going to take a player at number five, and he turned into Brandon Knight, I think Ryan McDonough's kind of saying that he'd be fine with that. That's where he kind of thinks that lines up. So I've come to terms with the pick that way, and I'm fine with it. I think that Brandon Knight gives the Suns a better chance to win and grow now than what might happen with a player that might not even be picked that high to begin with 3 or 4 years down the line. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense, and that stands with the original point that I hammered so far down everyone's throats when I made it over Twitter and on Brightside, is that I barely remembered it when we were initially talking about this, is that we heard McDonough and Hornacek saying for months and months that they were looking for that blue chip future all-star or current all-star to trade for, and that guy is Brandon Knight. And remember, the reports came out that they initially tried to trade Dragic for Brandon Knight a couple months prior in the season, and they got turned down. They obviously like Knight if that's the offer that they made. So I believe that they do think that Knight is a future all-star. I believe they've said that at some points. He was almost an all-star in the East. Of course, it's different from the East to the West. But the talent remains the same. And, yeah, I think your point makes a ton of sense. And this move makes more sense for where they are now, especially with the Tyson Chandler signing. I don't think they make the Tyson Chandler signing, of course, if that trade never happens. But this is – they want to start winning, and this is the type of move you make that's smart for the future, but it also does help right now, like you said, instead of 3 or 4 years down the line.
Now, unfortunately, we'll get to the sad truth. And despite all the reasons there are for optimism – there's a lot of things surrounding this team that are very rosy. You have, just like we talked about, Brandon Knight is still a budding player. Eric Bledsoe appears a lot more comfortable here, and he's, you know, still probably reaching his peak. The addition of Tyson Chandler, there's a lot of good things with this team. T.J. Warren's ascendance. So there's a lot of reasons why I can see a person thinking, yeah, this have a good chance. They can win 45 to 50 games. This can be a playoff team. There's no way I can tell you that that's not going to happen, because I believe that there is a chance that it will happen. And, you know, I don't really think that the Suns are going to be a bad team. I don't think that there's really the chance for a calamitous set of circumstances to erupt like last year. So I think that there's better roster balance, and even in spite of the question marks surrounding Markieff Morris. But despite all those good things, those positive vibes, the last over-under win totals out of Vegas that I saw, I had the Suns 19th with a win total of 36.5 for the over-under. And so out of those 19 teams, that also has the Suns finishing 10th in the West. So 36.5, Kellen, does that seem high, low, or about right? What if you had to bet right now, if you had to bet me a dollar, would you pick the over or the under?
I think I would pick the over. Looking at the teams that are in front of them, the Mavericks at 38.5, I do not think the Mavericks are going to win more than 38 games. That's definitely an under bet if you're looking for a bet to make. But I think they're a better team than the Mavericks, and I think that they can reach something like 38 to 41 wins. I think that's a little bit low, even if all these problems arise that we've been talking about, like what if the bench doesn't turn out that well? What if they're still a year away, like I was talking about? I think they're still capable of being over, but I'm not saying over, they're going to win 45 games and be the sixth seed in the West, or they're going to even be the eighth seed in the West, which would still be a success. I don't see the over bet being real. And the troubling thing is, of course, like you said, that's the 10th, that's going 10th in the West. And look at that. We're right in the middle of the late lottery once again there. The Phoenix Suns right around the Detroit Pistons and the Dallas Mavericks back in the middle of the lottery. What do you think about that win-loss, or that win total, sorry? Would you say over, under?
You know, I would say over. You know, where I think that they have it wrong is that they've got us 19th, so they got us picking 12th in the lottery, and we all know that the Suns are in love with the 13th pick. We know that that's their wheelhouse. So 12th is a little bit too low for us. So I think just looking at that, if you just flip the Suns and the Mavericks, then that looks about right to me. I could very easily see it fall in there. You know, I don't know. It's and I've had these discussions and seen some of the commenters, read some of this stuff on it. It just seems like with everything that went wrong last season and the wheels just fell off the team, and that team still won 39 games. And is this team really, with what they've put together, is this really going to be a worse team than that team last year through all of the things that went bad? I mean, that was just like a series of unfortunate events, one after another, that really just derailed the season. And I think this roster is even more talented than the 48-win team from the year before, but you know, that team seemed to have some kind of, you know, magical chemistry that you can't just duplicate that. And that's what, you know, Jeff Hornacek had even said before last season. You don't know whether, and I think Lon Babbie maybe too, that you don't know whether you can just duplicate that type of chemistry where you have that kind of camaraderie and things go together like that. So I'm thinking that is a little bit low, but, you know, I mean, that's not the only person, and Las Vegas isn't making, you know, building all those casinos because they're just picking stupid low win totals for teams, and they're just way off, and I mean, that's where the money is, and most of the national pundits, I mean, that's where they have the Suns, 9th, 10th on the inside, on the outside looking in. Have you seen many places that have actually been picking the Suns to make the playoffs this season?
No, I haven't, and I know if I was a pundit and I had a lot of – I just knew if I was wrong that people would be all over me, and I had a reputation on the line. I wouldn't pick the Suns to make the playoffs. The Markieff Morris thing is just way too much of not even a distraction, but just a what-if. Like, are they going to – if they deal Markieff, is it going to be for, like, basically scraps? If they deal him, is it going to be for a guy? There's just too many questions there. And then there's all the questions we talked about that don't include Markieff. So I haven't seen it much anywhere, and I don't blame people for not picking them. I don't think I'm going to wind up picking them this year. I like the Utah Jazz a lot, though, so that might differ amongst other people. But, no, I haven't really seen it anywhere. And, yeah, like I said, I don't blame them.
Well, you have that – the Anthony Davis is sexy and the Jazz are feisty and the Suns are just, you know, what are the Suns doing out there? They're just a little rudderless. I think that's the national perspective. But we'll see how that goes. And I'm going to get everybody's – I'm going to, you know, try to coerce everybody on the staff at Brightside to give me projected win totals before the season starts. And so there's still a little bit of time, some more preseason games to watch. We can watch how the Suns do, and maybe some of these other teams also before I make everybody carve it in stone. But we'll get that taken care of. Thank you for coming on the show tonight, Colin. That was great. I hope to have you on a lot more this season as you're joining your coverage with ArizonaSports.com as well as Brightside this season. You got any parting shots for our listeners before we head out?
Not really, no. I'm just really looking forward to having basketball again. I knew it was basketball season when I looked up and saw playoff baseball and looked at my coworker and said, I would rather be watching preseason basketball right now. Is that bad? And he said, yes, that's bad. So it's nice to have basketball back, and I'm looking forward to coming on the podcast more and having more bright side talk around us.
Cubs fans would boo you. Cubs fans would boo you. But I am also much more of a basketball guy than a baseball guy. I you know, I liked baseball when I was young, and then the steroid era kind of ruined it for me because I fell in love with the home run and watching Barry Bonds every time he went up to bat, and then they took it away, and the game just wasn't the same anymore. So hopefully no performance-enhancing drugs in basketball. I don't want to see people dunking from the three-point line, and then they take that away, and I just can't watch the sport anymore because they ruined it for me. So you heard that. Don't ruin the game for me. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks again, Kellen. This was Jim Kochenour, and this is the Yes of the Sun podcast. Oh, well, I guess we're gonna find out. Let's see.